On Wednesday, a suicide attack in northern Syria killed 19 people, including 4 Americans, in the city of Minbij. ISIS has taken responsibility. The attack comes 1 month after President Trump first announced that American troops would be pulling out of Syria after having defeated ISIS. Ben Hubbard is the Beirut bureau chief for the New York Times, and he's been following the developments. He joins us now from Beirut. Ben, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
So what do we know about this attack in terms of its targets? Was this a targeted attack towards American troops?
Seems very clear that this was definitely targeted towards American troops. This took place in the town of Minbij, which is in northern Syria, fairly close to the border with Turkey. This is an area that is clearly sort of under American protection, and I think where the Americans had felt very comfortable. What we heard from people in the town yesterday is that there was a particular restaurant downtown that they liked to stop at. They would go there and, you know, take breaks when they were doing patrols through town and eat and whatever. And yesterday, while they happened to be there, somebody wearing a explosive vest came in and blew himself up. And that's how this terrible event happened.
The U.S.-led coalition confirmed yesterday that American troops had been killed in this attack. And just an hour later, we heard this statement from Vice President Mike Pence. I'm going to play this for you. Take a listen.
Thanks to the leadership of this commander-in-chief and the courage and sacrifice of our armed forces, we're now actually able to begin to hand off the fight against ISIS in Syria to our coalition partners, and we are bringing our troops home. The caliphate has crumbled, and ISIS has been defeated.
Ben, you've covered the war in Syria for years. What do you make of the vice president's remarks?
Well, part of the trick is how you define what it means for the Islamic State to be defeated. The thing that set this organization apart from a lot of the other terrorist organizations that we're familiar with, Al-Qaeda and all the other organizations, is that their goal from the start was to establish a physical territorial entity. They wanted to have a so-called caliphate, you know, this sort of Islamic state that they were going to run, and it was going to have all the trappings of statehood. And so when people in the Trump administration talk about defeating ISIS, they're talking about getting rid of the physical caliphate, like the physical control of territory. And over the last number of years, because of intensive American airstrikes and also assistance from American forces on the ground to local fighters, both in Syria and Iraq, it is true that we've gotten rid of most of the territorial control. There are still some small pockets here and there where fighting is still going on and where, you know, they're trying to get, you know, get them out of this territory. So, you know, on one hand, it is true that the caliphate has largely been defeated. It's mostly gone in terms of being a territorial entity, but that doesn't mean that this organization no longer has the power to carry out attacks and to do, you know, things like this attack that it managed to carry out yesterday.
We know that the vice president was making these remarks, particularly after President Trump made a recent announcement that they would be withdrawing troops from Syria and from the region. Could this attack be the thing that changes his thinking?
It could really go both ways. You definitely had a lot of, you know, a lot of members of Congress and a lot of members of the president's own, you know, Republican Party coming out and saying this just proves that the Islamic State has not been defeated. This proves that we need to stay there so that we can continue to fight them and keep them from coming back in greater power. You know, there are certainly a lot of people who are arguing that the U.S. does need to stay and that this bombing we saw yesterday is one more piece of proof for all the reasons. On the other side, it's not hard to imagine a scenario where people say, wait, what? Minbij? Like, where's that? I've never heard of it. Does it have significant American interests? Are there oil wells there? Is there significant American commerce there? The answer to all those questions is no. So it's not hard to imagine a scenario where you're going to have some people saying, well, why did 4 Americans get blown up there? What exactly were we fighting for? And how exactly does that relate to, you know, our own security? And so we're just going to have to wait, I think, as the information comes out in the aftermath of this attack and see which way it goes.
Ben, we've seen images of the devastation, particularly how it affects children. Your colleague, Tyler Hicks, has done amazing work around this. But this humanitarian crisis doesn't seem to have an end. What are the sorts of conditions in Rukban right now?
Well, I think we kind of have to start with the larger humanitarian crisis going in Syria. I mean, the conflict that's been going on there since 2011 has displaced about half of Syria's population. I mean, half of the population of Syria has been moved somewhere else. I mean, millions of these people have become refugees outside the country, most of them scattered around the neighboring countries, Lebanon, where I am, Jordan, Turkey. They all have large refugee populations. Obviously, we had, you know, waves of refugees going to Europe on the boats. But the largest number are actually people who were displaced inside of Syria. So they've left one part of the country where there's fighting or there's violence or there's destruction. Then they've gone to another place thinking that either trying to go another place that was safe, or in the case of Rukban, they were trying to get into a neighboring country and the borders got shut. So a lot of the, you know, the neighboring countries of Syria have, for the most part, shut their borders to new refugees because they feel that they have too many and they don't want to take in any more. So Rukban is a place where tens of thousands of refugees who were hoping to get into Jordan ended up. And it's this very isolated place. It's kind of a desert camp. Conditions there in the best of times are quite miserable. It's been difficult at times for aid organizations to get in there and provide assistance. And then over the last number of weeks in the region here, we've had some pretty exceptional winter weather. There's been huge, huge storms, rainstorms at some of the higher altitudes. We've had snow. And so it's really made life miserable for a lot of the refugees around the region, both in the neighboring countries and inside of Syria. You know, that's the larger context of this report that we had this week from the UN, saying that there were 8 children who had died in Rukban. And then they also had reports that there were 7 more children who had died elsewhere in Syria who had been displaced.
The United Nations also reported that 10,000 people have fled violence in Deir ez-Zor since December. Ben, those 7 children that died while trying to get out, what was the situation like there?
We don't know very much, I mean, other than that, but this, you know, the conditions for these people, even in the best of times, are very, very dire. I mean, these are people who are leaving oftentimes very quickly. A lot of times people who are displaced in Syria have not just been displaced once, but have been displaced multiple times over the last number of years. So sometimes you'll meet refugee families who have lived in 5, 6, 7, 8 different places. And so, you know, we don't know the specific cases of these families or of these deaths, but you know, these are very, very dire situations that they're in. And then, you know, when their situation is that tenuous, and then all of a sudden you have incredibly inclement weather come along, whether it's freezing temperatures or serious rain, things like that, you know, then it just makes life that much harder for the most vulnerable, who are going to be the children and the elderly.
Is there concern that the situation could get worse if the U.S. withdraws its troops?
It's a bit hard to know. I think part of the difficulty of knowing how a U.S. withdrawal would affect the people in this region is that we don't know exactly who would come in and fill the void. We now have a situation where the U.S. is effectively the protector of about between 25% and 33% of Syria's territory. And you have local groups on the ground who are doing local security and governance and things like that. But you have the Turks to the north who are eyeing this territory. You have the Syrian government to the west who's eyeing this territory. And they've got Russia and Iran working with them, and they're looking at it. You still have jihadists underground. And so in a way, the U.S. is there as a kind of placeholder. And if the U.S. does decide to withdraw, it's very unclear who's going to act first, how they're going to act. So, you know, there's a lot of people in the region worried that if the U.S. does pull out in a very quick way without sort of finding some way to do a handover of these territories, that it could lead to all kinds of other instability. And none of that is going to be good for the displaced.
Ben Hubbard is the Beirut Bureau Chief for The New York Times. Ben, thank you.
Thank you.